You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Cooligans. In the first segment, we're going to talk about a lot. We're going to talk about Montreal versus Columbus. We talk about Seattle and Chicago. We talk about Bastian and Schweinsteiger throwing a little shade at his own teammates. We also talk about Polanco winning everything at the AOBX FIFA tournament. And also, is there foreskin in moisturizer?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that is all in the first segment. In the second segment, we talk to Steve Zakuani. He's a former Seattle Sounder player. He was drafted by the Seattle Sounders. He's currently the sideline reporter for the team. And we talk about a lot of stuff. We talk about grind. We talk about growing up in Tottenham. We talk about a career ending injury and how he's recovering and how he's just a great dude. He's one of the homies now.
Yeah, and in the third segment, he also regrets being on our podcast while we talk about Houston versus Vancouver, Red Bull versus LA Galaxy. And also, we beg you to subscribe to all of us and everything we do on every channel that we're on.
Please
hit all those buttons. That and more on this episode of the
Cooligan.
Hey, this is Alexi Lawless. There is nobody in U.S. soccer that is more important than the Cooligans.
Hey, everybody.
What's up, guys?
It's the Goddamn Cooligans.
Guys and girls. We're very actively trying to grow a female audience.
Yeah, come on. We're trying to get girls in this van. In this Cooligans van.
But don't worry, ladies. Yeah. It's an electric car. Yeah. It's safe.
And right now, Tropic Sounders and Kale Parker are going nuts. Looking up gifts with vans in it. Come to the Airbnb.
All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. Again, your favorite stand-up comedians who host the soccer podcast.
That hosts the gulliest soccer podcast.
That's right. It is the gulliest. And if you are in the Midwest and don't know what we're talking about, go to Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever scares your grandparents, that's gully.
All right. It's like... this podcast is like bringing a black boyfriend home.
Yeah, to your Republican senator dad. That's who we are. What up, family? Got anything in the fridge? That's us. Hi, my name is Alexis.
Hey, I'm Christian.
Hey, what's up? We're with your daughter now. And we're the Cooligans.
What's good, Mom?
Yeah. And maybe Mom, too. Okay, I see where you get it from, young lady.
Oh, man. So,
oh, boy.
Look, yeah, we have a good time here. You know, we
try.
We don't take ourselves too seriously.
We try not to.
another fun week. A bunch of stuff. So much stuff happening.
So much stuff is happening. It's like, you know, like a lot of plates are spinning, which I like.
Like that. This little Cooligans little project.
This little experiment.
it's coming work.
Yeah. I mean, they're actually asking us to like do stuff now.
Just a little sneak peek on a little bit of the hype. Again, we mentioned this, I think, a little bit last week, but Cooligans merchandise will be happening soon.
Oh, it'll be coming to you.
So we're gonna post when all those things are happening, and make sure you pick up a little gift for the family. You know, just it's a gift that obviously will warm everybody's heart. They'll be like, you give them a Cooligans shirt, and they'll be like, Dad, what is this?
Right.
But then you explain it to them.
But how did I not know that I needed this my entire life?
So that's going to be exciting. So that's we just want to get everybody's mouth watering.
We got a little bit of little something. You guys can take a piece of the Cooligans home.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Normally we would offer our bodies.
Yeah. Normally we would leave a little piece of ourselves in your home. But we're allowing you to just purchase a small piece of us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
we're selling foreskin in a glass. No, no, we're not.
Oh my God.
We're very giving.
It's a respected business.
What do you think's in your moisturizer, bro? It's all foreskin. It's true.
Anyway,
did you know that?
No, I don't. There's no way this is true.
100% true. Google it.
There is
a lot of foreskin in beauty products.
There's
tons.
Foreskin in beauty products.
And a lot.
What are the...
Like a lot.
What are the...
I would say it's actually all just blended up foreskin. That's all.
What are the
just
positive...
Just a Nutribullet or whatever those things are.
Oh, my God.
Why did we get off the rails so fast?
Very quickly. What are the positive attributes of foreskin and beauty products?
I would say first comes the fore and then the skin. No, I don't know. Apparently, it's good foreskin. Good foreskin.
Okay.
No, really, honestly, I don't know what it is.
Hot pun alert.
Wordplay. We need a meaty board. I just realized that. I'm going to get a meaty board, and you're going to hate it.
A meaty board? Like
M-I-D-I?
No, I know what you meant. M-E-A-T-Y.
Yeah, imagine that. A charcuterie plate. And you're like, mer, and I'm like, just got prosciutto in my mouth. I'm like, I told you I was getting a meaty board. We need both of those, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's like it has all like the skin rejuvenation stuff in it.
Okay. I'm going to go with this. There's no way this is true.
What? You have a laptop in front of you. Look it up.
No, because
I
don't want to see the results I get.
Yeah.
All right. There's no way I'm looking this up.
That is not moisturizer, sir. That is not moisturizer. But apparently, good for the skin.
Anyway,
put that in your search history. The NSA is like, all right, Christian's turn. Christian has turned. We got something on him.
Yeah. The NSA just busts through. Like FBI is like, this soccer podcast is over.
Yeah. Yeah. But what you looking at, fam?
Anyway. I had a good weekend. A bunch of things happened, but one of the things was we got an invite from the American Outlaws.
Oh yeah, AOBX.
And I started, American Outlaws, people know, obviously those are the supporters of the U.S. men's national team.
Right.
But you got to realize that even in the boogie down, Outlaws, the American Outlaws are there.
Oh, my God.
And they're double. I mean, it's like Outlaw squared.
Yeah, yeah. Dude showed up. Was like, yo, this is where we meet, fam. Like, they got knives and shit. Like, no. We're soccer fans. Whatever you want to call yourselves, bro. Who do I talk to? Who's the plug around here?
So, yeah, you got to keep, American Outlaws obviously have chapters all over the country.
Cute name in Kentucky, right? Perfectly fine name in Columbus, Ohio.
Exactly.
In the Bronx?
In the Bronx. It's a little different.
Yeah, certainly you don't want to go anywhere near the Latin American Outlaws. Those are a very different group. Very different group. They do not do FIFA competitions.
Very much. Yeah, they're very different. Yeah. But we got an invite, obviously, from Andy Bahania.
Oh, yeah.
Who came
to our birthday party also.
Yes.
And turned. Did I? You know who Phil from Chico is, right?
I do know Phil.
Phil, if you guys don't know who Phil from Chico is, you know the guy that was in high school and every good high school movie who... You don't have to write that he's high. You just know he's perpetually high. Given. That's this guy, right?
Because the guy in the movie is called Phil from Chico.
Yeah,
so we know that he is.
It's synonymous. So Andy Bahania and his girl Mariana were just sitting there, and he walked in, and from a few feet away, I see them have a warm embrace and have a conversation. And in my back of my head, I'm like, how do they know each other? Maybe he must live in the Bronx or something. So I walk up and I was like, wait, how do you guys know each other? This is a comedian and a degenerate comedian and two big passionate NYCFC fans who are fans of ours as well. And they're like, oh, we don't know each other at all. And I'm like, you guys are like hugging. First of all, he was the only person in that small group that walked in that you hugged and had all this.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, we just looked at him and knew he was high. I was like,
yeah.
And that's enough for an embrace. They're like, yeah, we want to get him smoked out.
Yeah. He walked in and he's a tall white guy with like shaggy hair.
Right. Yeah.
It's a given.
For sure.
Yeah. He might as well just have a pot leaf tattooed on his forehead.
Yeah. Or when his ringtone is smoke weed every day.
So we got an invite from that. Also, Kevin Foy, who's a part of AO Bronx. So I didn't know he was a part of American Outlaws at the time,
man.
But he was, and we were hanging out there. So we got to hang out with Kevin Foy, big fan of FIFA, the news, and the podcast. A good dude. I went.
And he got to see the real.
I went, and Alexis couldn't make it. He had a show in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go? Okay, we'll talk about it after. But I kind of just ran through this tournament. I mean, I really...
Dog, you bodied them. Yeah, what did you... You told me... You sent me the score line. It was like 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. I was like, you were getting better as the night went on.
Yeah, so I won the American Outlaws Bronx FIFA tournament, and it was, I was honored to be there. A lot of... people knew who I was. They knew the Cooligans. They were very supportive. They knew who they were. Like, why isn't Alexis here? So you can embarrass him in front of us.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently there was a couple Phil and Alexis's that night. So it wasn't just me. And this is what I love about it. This is retribution for me. People think I'm bad at the game. I'm not bad at the game. You're just really good at the game.
Yeah, I will say that. Yeah, they were a couple really good games amongst the other players.
Right.
Because, they were sort of Okay. Even level.
It's like a high school basketball tournament, but then one team has Shaq on it. Yeah, that's a, yeah. I think that one. I think that team's gonna do a little better than everyone else.
Yeah, I think they. This is what I know, and you know, I don't know how. Obviously, FIFA is a very popular game, and
sure.
we don't talk about it too much at length. You know, in this podcast,
no,
but it's a big part of our lives.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like,
and it's a big part of soccer fandom.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, for the last easily 10 years, I've played FIFA almost religiously.
Right. Yeah.
And ever since it's been like an Xbox 360 and Xbox One, just, I mean, it's gotten to just a whole nother level.
Yeah.
And yeah, the people I played just were not about that life.
Nah,
you know what
man.
I'm saying? I'm just.
They're not comedians with tons of extra time on their hands.
With zero day jobs.
Yeah, yeah. that can perfect their skills at the game.
Yeah. And overall, this is what I would say about. The different and I this is why I get mad at you about when we play is the lack of patience defensively. You know, this is not, now I'm gonna sound like a you know like
you're
Patrick Vieira giving a coach.
Yeah, you're a FIFA coach now. This is you. Did you get your FIFA coaching license?
I should my credentials.
Yeah, you're EA. Your
I'm
EA
waiting for my credentials.
Yeah. He's at license B for EA.
So I that's what I noticed the most from a lot of the players, even the people who were the people who won last year and things like that. I was they were just so impatient defensively that's really the issue. It's like I would make a couple passes around and they would just run at defenders and easily make 1-2 passes and burn people, and that's what leads to a 5-0. You know, scoreline.
You thought this was going to help. This sounds really condescending. You just bodied this entire room of people who all get along and are friends, and you're like, let me explain to you the small thing I did here, because you all suck. But let me explain exactly how you all suck.
Exactly. And, you know, and for...
Now people are realizing that I'm the nice one on this podcast.
Look, for $99.95, come to my FIFA coaching school, and I will show you all the ins and outs on how to play this game.
It's actually called FIFA for Dummies. And you're the dummies. So walk in, grab your dunce cap, and sit down and watch as Christian Polanco breaks it down.
But I had a good time. Very fun. Good
people.
They
seem like a great group to hang out with.
Yeah, I had a very good time. So thank you again, AO Bronx, for the invite. And
AOBX.
And yeah, and now and the Cooligans now run the Bronx.
Yeah,
so
man.
What are you going to do?
We're the Terror Squad, son. We run the Bronx. And we're going all the way up. That's enough references for that.
Yep.
I could not go because I was at Cove Haven. I was in Cove Haven. If you don't know what that is, if you don't live in Pennsylvania or anywhere near it, or if you don't have dirtbag family members, it's this place from like, I think the 80s, where it's like the heart shaped beds and like the martini glass, hot tubs. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Remember Mount Airy commercials back in the day? Mount Airy, love, all you have to bring is your love of everything. Remember those commercials where like everything is like really cheesy?
People outside of the tri-state area were like, what are these idiots talking
Google
about?
Google it. It is amazing. Yeah, the YouTube has the commercials for
it. Mount Airy Lodge was a commercial.
It's a fuck palace, all right? It's an 80s fuck palace. It's exactly what it is. You go there. It's a heart-shaped bed. You're not going there to take a nice nap, okay? You're going there to explore holes you didn't know he wanted to go into in your body, all right?
Yeah.
Right? So they told me I get a free room. No, thank you. I'm not touching anything in that room. I left Brooklyn at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to get there at 7. It's a 2.5 hour drive, but I thought maybe I'll hit a little traffic. I left at 4, maybe like 4:08, maybe max. I got there at 8:25.
Whoa.
That's how much traffic I hit getting through the city. And some of you guys are going, oh, if you're in Brooklyn, you should have went through Staten Island. There was already traffic over there. So I thought, let me go this way. And I used Google Maps. But the further
I waited.
What time
was the show?
It started, I was told to get there at 8:30, right?
Okay.
So I wanted to get the room just to change in it and then go to the show, and that's it. That's all I was going to use the room for. It's just like, close the door, let me get changed right here, and then go. I ran right straight to the venue, which is called the Champagne Palace. Of course it is, right? Not bad.
That's what Drake hangs out, Champagne Poppy.
Poppy Palace, the Champagne Poppy Palace. So I walk in, and they're like, oh, the show doesn't start for another hour.
Oh boy, don't you hate when that happens?
So, but it's like not enough time for me now to go get a room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of these things where like it looks like a campus. There's like little buildings everywhere. It's not like one big building. It's in the middle of the woods in Pennsylvania. So they have like in the Pocono. So they have tons of space. So the show was fine. There wasn't that many people. But I said to them, I said, hey, I get a meal, right? So like, can I order now? And they're like, oh, you have to wait until the waiter comes up. All right. show starts, no waiter. I'm the middle act, so I do 35 minutes. Then the headliner does an hour, right? So I get off, and I was like, all right, who do I put my order through? And they're like, oh, no, there's just one serving. You know, the kitchen just makes whatever gets ordered, and that's it. So the kitchen's closed now. They were served during the open, like the first, yeah, yeah, the host. So I was like, wait, you told me that a waiter was going to come up. They're like, yeah, sorry about that. So what am I going to do now? So now I have to drive home 2.5 hours at 10 o'clock at night. And the only thing there was to eat was McDonald's. I ate McDonald's for the first time in 8 years. And guess how much my stomach enjoyed that?
Oh boy. Hold on. You, Alexis Guerrero's, had fast food?
Yes. Oh my God.
It wasn't artisan Italian from Napoli delivered from.
Listen, if I could have called.
Because look, everybody, you were talking about me being like some FIFA snob. When it comes to food,
right?
Alexis,
I know
is
what I'm talking about.
The FIFA motherfucking snob.
I am. I know what I'm talking about. I know where there's good food, and that's why I live in a city like New York.
If I ever suggested going to some fast food place, Alexis would lose his mind. Go crazy.
All I ate was breakfast that day.
Oh, you poor thing.
And by the way, here's what I had for breakfast. I had crumbled pork, right? With a little bit of corn, a little bit of green beans in it, right? A little bit of seasoning in there, right? It's not bad. I browned it up real nice in a pan. Then in that fat, I cooked the eggs. And then I folded those eggs into the pork, and then I put that on sourdough bread, and that was my sandwich for breakfast.
Now, if anyone is curious why Alexis weighs what he does, you know exactly why.
And if you're curious as to why Christian doesn't weigh anything near that, you know why. It's because he has complete disdain for food. This has nothing to do with soccer. We've been talking for 20 minutes about nothing but about food and tournaments. But okay. You won the tournament. What did you win? Did you win anything?
I won a copy of FIFA 17.
Okay, wait, no, seriously?
I swear.
Obviously, you're good at that game already.
Why would I? You know, maybe we'll give it away or something.
That's like
that.
Winning a pie eating contest. What do you win? A pie. You win a pie, baby.
What an honor.
Come on, get in here. Get this other pie.
I also got a AL Bronx scarf.
We had those already.
But that's what I won. I'm just telling you what I won.
Jesus Christ. What are you going to win? Your girlfriend?
They didn't expect me to win.
Yeah. That's really well, now they know. You done learned them, son.
Now I'm holding the title. We'll see.
You got that belt. Well, I'm coming for that belt next year.
We'll see who's gonna get it. All right. So let's get to the show. Also, obviously, this is an exciting episode because we will be talking to Steve Zakuani.
Yeah, former player.
Former player, current, he's a sideline reporter for the Seattle Sounders.
Yeah, North London, born and raised.
He was not born. He was born in the Congo.
Right, born in the Congo. North London, raised.
Exactly. So
he's a gooner.
It was a great conversation. And if you don't know who Steve Zakuani is, obviously, he was drafted by the Sounders.
Yeah.
And I believe in 08, 07, give or take.
I think it was 2010.
Oh, was it that late?
Yeah. Okay. 2010 was his rookie season. He's just a beast. He was incredible, suffered a really bad injury, but you're going to hear all about that in the second.
Exactly. And that's the thing. His story is just very, very fascinating and inspiring. I mean, he suffered a terrible, terrible injury playing the Colorado Rapids, a few years ago, and it made his career a lot shorter. And
Colorado Stoke City Rapids.
So it was incredible. So we have a conversation with him in the second segment. So we'll get to that in a bit. But let's talk about some MLS.
That's right, baby.
MLS.
MLS. MLS.
So many syllables in Spanish.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Look, this was a really great weekend of games. A lot of Western, Eastern Conference against Western Conference matches.
Yeah.
And
road matches for some.
Matthew Doyle, who we spoke to a couple weeks ago, he had put out an article about just how the balance of power seems to be shifting. Remember the last few years, the Western Conference has always been very dominant. But the Eastern Conference...
Now it's
looking really good. Obviously, with Toronto, they just refuse to lose. They're not losing any games.
Yeah.
But
are they on a record pace right now? I think they're on a record pace.
They won six in a row.
Jeez.
I know he mentioned Matthew Doerr mentioned a week ago that when they were at five in a row, that no team won five games in a row last season. So I don't know what the record is for of a winning streak in the MLS, but it seems like Toronto's getting close.
And everyone was worried about Giovinco and Outdoor playing together. I mean, Jeez.
Yeah, they're doing just
fine. And Toussaint Ricketts, man. Toussaint Ricketts? I don't know how you pronounce it. Ricketts, man.
Just don't say anything French ever.
Yeah, Ricketts. Toussaint.
But let's...
Croissant.
Let's start with the other Canadian team.
Oof.
Because Montreal... this season has been so... And maybe this is why we love MLS so much.
Yeah.
It's just that from year to year... It's just
you have no clue what's happening. No,
yeah, it doesn't. There's no consistency from year to year. You know, like in the NBA, for the most part, it's LeBron, it's Curry, the Cavaliers, the Warriors. Like you know
what to expect.
Exactly.
Right.
There is, and it's odd because even in the MLS, there's not like these grand changes where like six or seven players are now on a squad where the lineups change that much. It could be like one or two guys.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the team is just in last place.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Rebels are going through the same thing. And there's a lot of clubs that are going through this. You move away one player. And I think it's the cap makes the depth is so important. Right. But the people at the bottom are sort of. You have to front load so heavily that if you lose one of those front load players, if you lose one of those first 11 or 12 players that are really, really essential to your club, and it's really more like seven or eight, if you lose one of them, I mean, you just go down in shambles. And the thing is that one other person gaining an additional one of those, you know, they level up a little higher. You know what I mean?
And
Montreal is just, oof, what a struggling.
Yeah, so Montreal played Columbus, and for the most part, there's just been this disappointing... these disappointing results for Montreal, yeah. Where they can't sort of replicate that form that they had last season. I mean, we saw them. We went to the playoff game against Toronto, and you know they were up. What they won 3-2, but they were up 3-0, and ended up conceding two. And, you know, and we know that they lost in the second leg. But for the most part, Montreal was a pretty good team. I mean, they looked good. And pretty consistent throughout the year. Right now, they're just in last place. I mean, everybody knows that's the Philadelphia Union spot. Why are you taking?
Yeah,
why are you taking up? They belong.
So rude.
they want to be piled on top of. Like,
get about their house, son. They're doing so much better too. But I feel bad for Montreal also because I think that was the best. That was my favorite away trip I think I've ever had. As much as I loved MLS Cup, there was something really special about the Montreal trip. Those fans, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
watch the video. Watch the video of us going to them. I mean, they really put on a show.
So Montreal, obviously, they played Columbus and they lost 3-2.
Justin Miram
just went off.
He promised his mom a goal and was like, "Baby girl, I got you three." And you probably wouldn't call your mom baby girl, but whatever.
That's right. It was mother. Happy Mother's Day again to our four female listeners. that probably do not have children. No. Also,
we love you guys. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you. But yeah,
what would we be without you?
This was I like watching Montreal. Just on any given day, they're a good team that they provide like an entertaining product.
Yeah, Nacho Piatti. I mean,
Nacho Piatti. We've you know talked highly about him. You know,
at length
for years. You know, even though we've been doing this one a year and a half.
Yeah.
But
you should have heard our conversations before the mics ever showed up.
I was very impressed with the kid. As they were calling him on the broadcast, Balou Jean-Yves Tabla.
That's the gentleman that the reporter told us about.
Yeah.
Local product.
And this kid is just, I mean, this is what I'll get to this later, but this is what I feel like sort of the Red Bulls are missing, a creative player like this. He just provides a little bit of just fun anytime he does a one-on-one. I mean, it's the equivalent of like when we get to see Jack Harrison do a one-on-one, we're like, oh, what's he gonna
right,
do
right 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 right.
And every time he's on a one-on-one, he's like, he always just provides something exciting.
It's like the feeling of wonder.
Yeah,
like, ooh, what can happen now.
And Montreal, for the most part, I think outside of the last goal, just kind of got unlucky. I mean, they got just unfortunate deflections, and Merrim just did the right thing.
Yeah, Merrim got two lucky bounces to go his way. But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, when you get an opportunity, you gotta land it, right? And he did, man. And let me tell you something. He's been bubbling. He's been bubbling for a hot minute. And I'm glad. I'm happy to see him. First, his first career hat trick. Okay. I'm happy to see all those things. And I also like the fact that they were still going for it at the end of the match. He wanted that hat trick. Mm-hmm. I think the last goal was scored in, like, 90 plus three.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's what you want to see.
A couple of interesting things that I thought that I found in the game. First, Arthur, the midfielder who broke his hand against the Red Bulls, was back, and he came back with a giant yellow cast. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but it was I've never really seen like a cast on you see it in the NFL, right? Because
they do the full hand wrap,
a big hand wrap, and they just have a club hand. They can play without. It's
like,
really...
oh, so you wrapped it in a weapon? Oh, great, yeah.
The cast seems
for those of you who don't watch the NFL, imagine someone made a cast of you while you were holding a cheeseburger. That's essentially what it looks like.
So it almost, I don't know if you play video games very much, but it sort of
just FIFA.
It looked like Mega Man. Remember Mega Man?
Remember that. Yeah.
That big, the big
gun
cannon,
shot the balls.
But it looked that uncomfortable,
right?
And it's interesting because it to me, I don't think I remember seeing a player play with a broken wrist.
Right.
And I know you don't use your hands in soccer. I mean, obviously Arthur's not doing any of the throw-ins.
Right.
Because he's going
to be hilarious.
He's going to throw him like an NFL football. But
or they just start playing yakety sacks as he goes to do it.
But it seemed like to me that even when I play, you do use your hands a little bit, especially defensively, just to put your hand on a guy, just to impede.
It's a part of the feel of the game too. Like you put your hand on a guy and you could feel him move left or right.
So you need your fingers, to kind of to play like at 100% to some extent. So it seemed a little odd that he was doing that. Another thing that I found, I don't know if you know this or this was new to me, but Higuain, I don't know if you saw this, but he took a shot. He took a Rabona that he missed, and it was the most unnecessary Rabona.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been amazing if he did it.
If you landed, you're like, that kid's got skill.
but at that point, I mean, he had he was one-on-one with the keeper. Just use your left foot.
Yeah.
Like, there's no real issue. But I didn't know that Higuain's nickname was Pipa.
Pipa.
I mean, I've been watching MLS a while, never heard it. And then this season, all of a sudden, that's all I hear.
Well, it also popped back up. I knew it, but I forgot it because we don't hear this all the time.
Yeah.
But the Panenka that he hit,
the penalty that he did last
week. Chip penalty, basically, is a Panenka. They're Pipa with a Panenka. I was like, oh, that's right, Pipa. That's what they call him.
Never heard it. And I'm all of a sudden.
Well, you like it or you hate it?
I think it's fine. But
what do you mean fine? You got to be one side. Do you like it or hate it? Are you upset you didn't know about it because you want to call him that more?
You know what it is? You know, it's like when you hear a new slang term and you're like, no, this doesn't sound good. This is not going to work out.
Yeah, I'm not going to be using throwed anytime soon.
Like when I remember the first time I heard somebody say, yo, that shit is off the meat rack. Right. When I heard that, because like obviously it was a derivative of off the hook.
Yeah.
This is off the hook. And then somebody was like, yo, that shit is off the meat rack.
Was past the hook sign. Well, first it starts off with the meat rack. Well, then it's off the meat rack.
And then when I first heard that, I was like, no, please, please leave. Please leave my neighborhood. Yeah. And then like 2 weeks later, I'm like, yo, that shit was off the meat rack.
No, where'd you get that? I just thought of it.
Yes.
I try to get like, you know, when an audience is really good, everyone's like, oh, they're great or they're hot.
Mm-hmm.
When they're really, really good, like too good, like anyone could kill. I try to get wet. I try to get that to be the thing. Like, oh, dude, they're really wet. And no one liked it. Everyone hated it. I still think it's great. Everyone. I mean, like to like a man, they were like, yo, that's disgusting. Don't.
Yeah,
it
doesn't feel right.
It makes everyone uncomfortable.
It's like the word moist makes a lot of people uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It's like a common thing.
That's so stupid. That's like people afraid of clowns. Man up.
That crowd was wet.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, they're super wet. I used to say that. Or they're too wet.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, it's a good bookend to the foreskin stuff we were talking about before.
So. The absolutely correct foreskin stuff we were talking about.
So, obviously, Columbus looks good. And then
Columbus is looking good. There's a lot of there's a lot of clubs at the top of the East right now that I can't tell who's going to finish at the end. My early pick was Atlanta, apparently. I'm a little wrong right now. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, they're having a tough time, but you know, I think it's because they've had that stretch of away games, and I think Mercedes-Benz Stadium is built, I think you know they'll get those points that they lost
for sure.
Sort of in this time. And another thing, Montreal Impact, they got a new designated player. Swedish?
Oh, wow. What's his
Blerim,
name?
Blerim Zimali.
Yeah, Zimalian.
Not Zimali. Yeah, and he was, he just got signed like a week ago.
Yeah, about a week ago.
And he looked pretty good. And I think whenever there's a designated player obviously signed, I think it's a little odd to start them immediately, don't you think? I mean, just
and it's also like a good, like, they were losing. I mean, well, he started, right?
He started,
yeah. So, I didn't see the match, but he, yeah, I would bring him in maybe the 70th minute, you know, give him a little bit of a chance to like see the pace.
I agree, yeah. As opposed to starting. And I just thought that for the chemistry sake,
right?
You know, with a guy like Piatti who likes having the ball. Mankosu. There's a certain
who was injured. He didn't play.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But there's a certain chemistry that you don't want to kind of mess with.
Right.
And Zamali, I thought he was a little too aggressive, like as opposed to connecting a couple passes with, you know, you don't even know these guys. You don't know what they're capable of. So yeah, that was the one thing I was a little bit surprised with, because they did give up two early goals, and I would never say that it's his fault. But again, it's just like messing with the chemistry. Yeah, it's just get him out of here.
Yeah, I think you're done. Nah.
But he did look good, and he was playing aggressive, and you know he I forgot who he got fouled by, but it was the center back from Columbus, and ended up the center back ended up ripping his shirt.
Yeah.
He did the get into prison and fight the biggest guy.
Yeah, take out the biggest guy you see. Yeah. Thank God they weren't playing Portland. Powell?
Exactly, yeah.
Good God.
So Montreal, they have a lot to figure out. They're only 5 points away from a playoff position.
Yeah, it's not too late. It's not too late to make some changes. And hopefully the Zamali guy comes in and, you know, shifts some stuff around.
Exactly. So let's also talk about Chicago and Seattle and then get to our interview, because this was...
Completely unexpected.
Very unexpected. And again, the Seattle Sounders, this another weirdly disappointing season. It's just like a little bit of these poor results.
But look, they had a really bad season, fired their manager, and still won the MLS Cup. So I'm not too worried about them right now. But I will say,
the answer is fire Brian Schmetzer and
bring
you will
in
win.
Shiggy Schmidt. Or who's Brian Schmetzer's assistant? They just said the assistant has got the juice, baby.
Exactly. That's how you get your MLS Cup.
And then whoever it is has to hate me. That's part of winning an MLS Cup.
That it just keeps going down the line. Eventually, like in 10 years, the ball kid is the coach.
He's the coach. He's like, I guess I got to hate this guy, Alexis, in order to win. But is the term capitulation, am I using it correctly? Are they falling apart? What is it?
I wouldn't say they're falling apart. Per se, look, they're only 3 points away from a playoff position. They got to the MLS Cup, I believe in fifth or sixth place.
I don't think anyone's worried about them, so to speak. But I think if you are a Seattle Sounders fan, you're expecting a lot more. Look, the Dempsey goal was dope.
Yes,
but you're expecting a lot more.
Yeah, I think what's kind of surprising is, Roman Torres didn't play.
Right.
I think the defensive issues that they did not really have at the end of last season, you sort of thought they would still have that defensive presence
right
at the beginning of this year, and they do not.
Yeah,
they can look what happened against the Revolution. They concede just wait. I mean, obviously they concede too many goals, but you don't see that that confidence, that strength. That bullying that they kind of did at the end of last season.
Yeah, they're not playing like grown ass men.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know,
that's it. I'm sure that's exactly what Schmetzer's going over now.
There were a couple controversial moments in this game. Obviously, Nikolic,
the penalty on him,
the penalty, which
I watched Simon Borg's video.
Yeah,
just to kind of get a closer look, because I knew that was going to be probably the first thing they talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't hate the call.
I do hate the call.
I think Nikolic overacts, but still there was contact.
But I mean, he clearly got the ball first. I believe it was.
Not the only thing you need for it to not be a pen. You know what I mean?
No, I understand that. But there wasn't any to me, there wasn't any sort of, I don't know, malicious intent. Alfaro. It was Tony Alfaro. I thought he got the ball. I thought he got the ball first. He didn't go through the player in any real way. I think
The trailing leg hit him.
No, the trailing leg, the leg that he did the tackle with hit him way after he hit the ball. And Nikolic did dive. I mean, there's no.
He didn't dive. He acted. He over. I mean, he embellished is what he did.
Yes. Well, he accentuated.
There you go. He accentuated
the contact, but. The contact happened way after the ball was struck, and I thought it was a good tackle. I was very surprised. I think the referee didn't have a great angle. I think it was a little bit blocked. He seemed too certain, and it didn't look good.
More controversial to me is Akam getting the encroachment call on the penalty kick, the ensuing penalty kick.
Yeah, this was ridiculous.
And then here's the thing. I don't mind that. You know, I think Fry did step off the line early, right?
No, but that's not why.
I know that wasn't, but that was also something. And then there was the encroachment from the player that was behind him. Fine.
Yeah, this was tough because there wasn't like a great angle in the live feed of the game. And to me, I saw Bastian Schweinsteiger as the person who encroached first.
Right, so then it shouldn't count because it was your own player. It's usually the opposing side.
Exactly.
Can't encroach. But here's what's more controversial. They have to re-kick the penalty.
Yeah.
And then who comes up?
Nikolic
does. He's like, you know what, fam? I'm the one.
Yeah, because Price stopped it. He stopped it. And Akam, that was a terrible penalty.
Terrible penalty. But you got to give the guy a second shot. You know, this isn't a corner kick in a pickup game.
So look, because in the NBA, when there's a free throw and there's a lane violation, depending on if it's the team that's shooting the free throw, you lose the opportunity for the free throw. If it's the opposing team, then you get to retake it. What I heard was that both teams encroached, and that's why they had it retaken. That's what that was like the ref position after the game.
But
I didn't see that. I saw Bastian like at least a foot and a half. Encroached before the shot was taken.
Right, if that line was the last defender, he would have been offside.
Yeah, I think Bastian was the one who started the encroachment. So then everyone else was like, all right, well, if he's going to go. Then,
right.
Yeah, you know, so look, I think Chicago would have won regardless, but this was a poor call from
them. I also think it's just what happened to Akai? How do you give up the ball to Nikolic to score there? To take the penalty.
Oh, you think? Wait, what do you think? David is soft all of a sudden?
It's a bitch move. You give up the ball like that. That's exactly. I've been talking about this from the beginning. You know, you can't do that. You got to go back up there and you got to right the wrong. You tore a terrible shot.
Yeah. Alexis is very concerned with the optics and like, well, bro, how you going to, are you a man or not?
I mean, dog, if I'm talking to you about this, it's obviously a big deal. I'm not concerned with the optics. I'm saying that's a team, you know. Yeah, it looks like you got no heart. You know,
well, it's similar to remember last year with Kai Kamara and Pipa.
And Pipa,
remember they got into a little thing because Kai Kamara wanted that hat trick.
That was enough to get the guy off the club. That you got to stay underground is what I'm saying.
So you think? Well, Kai Kamara did stand his ground, and now he's in a new team. So,
and
so you think he was right in that?
Don't look like a bitch, though. I mean, you know, all you have is your word and your balls, and he used both in that sense.
Okay, again, we remind female listeners: we want more female listeners.
We want you to also disagree with me. Apparently,
hopefully, this stuff relates to you, and you're like, you know, because women always say you only got your word and your balls.
Only,
I only hear that from women.
Well, it was Mother's Day, so you must have been listening to my mother's conversation with me. It's old Daisy Guerrero.
Chicago obviously won 4-1, and great. Overall, they played well. Bastian, again, Dax. I thought Dax was incredible this game. Bastian was doing his thing. Just great passes. When Bastion got here, I was like, I don't really know what to expect out of him.
And, yeah, I mean, I shit on the move too.
I didn't shit on it. I was just like, I don't know.
Oh,
what
God,
he's
you
do.
Were. I mean, no one heard it because the mics were out. But you were just like, you were vicious. You were savage.
But I was. I didn't predict him to be this this Pirlo-esque. Gonna just picking teams apart with great passes.
No, and you brought up something last week where he sort of talked badly about the level of the team. I don't think we did this on the podcast.
We didn't do this on the podcast. We talked about it on FIFA News, and this was a thing. Very quickly, we should at least address, because I've been hearing about it more. Taylor Twellman did an interview with him as well, and. Yeah, Bastion.
And he had to address it?
Yeah, yeah. He did talk about it.
Oh, really?
And it was, what the interesting part was.
What happened was,
what happened was. Yo, this, my dude.
Fam, you should have been there. I done seen it all. If you didn't hear, Bastian Schweinsteiger said that he expects better runs. The players aren't making the runs that he expects. They lose the ball too easily. He kind of shit on them, but then he was like all lighthearted, like, well, I mean, that's why they're playing here. If they did it, the things I'm talking about, they'd be playing in Europe, right?
Yeah, and that was a lot of people were like, you definitely shots fired at MLS, but and some people, nobody disagreed. Nobody, we sort of understand.
Yeah,
and they were talking about, Taylor Twellman was talking about this in. During the game about how, like, this is, it's obvious, like, nobody has the argument that Duke basketball is better, should be better than an NBA team, you know,
right.
Like, we understand that this is that and people still watch it. It doesn't need to be a critique of why you watch it,
right,
or don't watch
exactly
it.
That doesn't mean it's not a fun league to watch. It just means that right now our level isn't where a lot of established clubs are in Europe,
and
makes sense.
Yeah, which makes total sense. And the thing that I was most bothered with is not that he said these things in general, but that he made them public, right? So this is like what he did say.
Wait, you had a problem with that?
What he did say, he criticized his teammates, and he said that they're not doing what we're what we discuss in team training, and they're not following sort of what we practice.
You're right. I forgot that he said that part too.
And that is the thing where it's like that, maybe as like a, you know, coming from Europe, I mean, even coming from Europe in England, you say something like that, the media will lose. God. I mean, you're in every tabloid.
That's it.
For talking shit.
Yeah, Eurovision, that stupid singing competition, they're going to be talking about the fact that you said that.
Yeah. And that is a thing. To me, it's a little not classy for him to kind of throw his teammates under the bus.
It was in bad taste, for sure. It wasn't tactful in any way, shape. It was lacking tact.
Well put, because I didn't understand. I was like, what's tactful?
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. Or tactless.
Yeah. Tactless is the other one I was trying to search for. Yeah, it certainly wasn't talcum powder. That was not.
So Chicago, obviously, they're figuring some stuff out, and it's good to see them where they are. Seattle has a lot of work to do still.
Yeah.
But we have to get to our interview with Steve Lacuana.
For sure.
Obviously, a great dude, and we talked to him about a lot of stuff. We talked to him about the Sounders, about MLS Cup, about, you know, retiring at a young age, and also grime.
Yeah, man, we talk a little bit about grime. We also talk about his recovery period, you know. Yeah. And I think it's just a great interview. I had a lot of fun, even though technically we haven't done it yet. We're about to. I mean, right, guys?
Exactly.
Keep that going. So why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break, and then we'll start our interview with Steve. We got to get him on the phone, and then we'll come back after that. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to that first segment. We got some nice news. We've got a new sponsor.
Yeah, we do. It's exciting.
This is a big one, too.
Yeah, we're excited to be working with these guys.
We absolutely love this publication. We read Howler. We've done a video. The Pirlo taste test was Howler's creation, and we did a video for it. We absolutely love Howler. If you don't know what Howler is, it's part magazine, part art project, really. And they really do a deep dive into the soccer world. They cover stories that no one else covers. It's absolutely incredible, and it's all based in America. It's an American soccer magazine, and it is the most beautiful American soccer magazine.
Exactly. It's a physical magazine. It is not just an online, they do online publications and
great
stuff like
online
that.
Stuff
great online work, but it's every magazine that they put out, they feel like a collector's item. So
absolutely,
they're a cool thing to just have. I mean, you can always look through them. I mean, it's like having almost like a a snapshot in history of soccer every time you have a physical copy of that magazine.
It's almost like a quarterly table, like coffee table, a book.
Very much so.
Really cool. So if you guys go to shop.howlermagazine.com, that's shop.howlermagazine.com, you can get yourself the magazine. And if you use Hooligans as your promo code, you're going to get 20% off.
Exactly. So do that. You will be supporting the show. You'll be getting a great soccer magazine and just a piece of, like Alexis was saying, a piece of art on your coffee table, you know, every couple of months. It's a great magazine. We love it. And if you want to help out the Hooligans, you want to help out Howler, subscribe to Howler Magazine. You're not going to regret it.
Absolutely. So just go to shop.howlermagazine.com. Again, that's shop.howlermagazine.com. Use the word Hooligans, COOLIGANS, and you're going to get yourself 20% off, and you're going to be helping us out, which would be awesome. That's right, baby.
All right, we're back, guys. And I'm very excited about our next guest.
Me too. I think this is the first. This isn't the first retired player we've had. I forgot. We just spoke to Alexi Lalas. I mean,
oh sure.
What the hell am I talking about? but this is pretty cool. This is a really cool story. Some of you guys who've been watching MLS for a few years might remember this guy. You might remember, unfortunately, one pretty harrowing play that he was a part of. But he made a comeback from it. I mean, coming all the way from Congo to London to the U.S. And then into all of our hearts.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, that's where he's sitting right now.
Right now. And it's heavy on our chest. But anyway, once again, unless you're driving, put your hands together for the one, the only, Steve Zakuani, everybody.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
I know. Thanks for agreeing to be on. Are you still based in Seattle now?
Yeah, I live out in Seattle, yeah.
Okay, and so you really just want to be around rain all the time, huh?
Well, I grew up in London, so it's the same for me, man.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. I mean, geez. Yeah. You went to California and you're like, this isn't for me, you know? I want it to be gray. Now, talk to us a little bit about, because you mentioned you were raised in London, but you're originally from Congo, right? How old were you when you went to Tottenham, if I'm not mistaken?
I was 4, so I grew up in the Congo. I was born in the Congo, but yeah. I didn't grow up there. I left at 4 and then spent pretty much my whole entire childhood/teenage years growing up in London in a city called Tottenham. People might know Tottenham because of the team, but the city there is like, it's in the inner city, very rough neighborhood, but was a great place to learn to play. That's where I learned it. Was about 50 minutes away from Arsenal, where I ended up playing eventually. But yeah, I grew up in Tottenham.
Yeah, and you mentioned it's a rough city. What made the switch? How did you end up in Tottenham? Does Tottenham have a big Congolese population? Or
yeah, it does. I mean, for us, our family just was that my dad got a job in London. He got a job, so our whole family moved to London. But yeah, I mean, where I grew up in Tottenham was around... it was just a bunch of different immigrants. I mean, there was people from the Congo. We had people came in from Jamaica. We had, you know, all African countries, Nigeria, Ghana, Ivory Coast. And then we also had like Romanians and Turkish people, and there were Somalians. It was just very, very diverse. I mean, the school I went to was probably 60-70% immigrants. So I grew up around people from all kind of diverse backgrounds. And we had white English kids too. So that was the Tottenham I grew up in. It's still pretty much the same to this day as well.
Yeah, Tottenham is famous for Tottenham and South London seem to be the two most famous spots for grime music, which you're a fan of, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, actually started in East London. Tottenham's in the north of London, so grime actually started in the east of London. This was before it was called grime or anything. It just was a new kind of music. This is back in like the very, very late 90s, early 2000s. And then it spread all across London. And about maybe in 2005, the mainstream media began to call it grime and it just stuck. But it actually began in the east side of London. And then it spread to where I lived in the North London, and then south and west and everywhere eventually. But yeah, I mean, everyone from the inner city is a big fan of grime.
And how I've seen you in other interviews talk about how, you know, you grew up listening to American hip hop and American rap. How was grime received? Because I'm from Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn. And when I first heard grime music, I'm like, this makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's so aggressive. I actually thought it was on too fast. I was like, we might have to slow this. I think there's something wrong with the record player.
Man, that's funny. No, it is fast. But what it is for us, that's just what we were used to. And that music was... that the people that were doing grime weren't big stars, big artists. They were just your friend down the street, people from the neighborhood. I mean, they're big now and they're mainstream now, but back then it was just everyone did it. So it was just what we're used to. It was, you know, we were depicting our life growing up in the inner city of London. And I think now it's changed. You can get versions of it that are a lot slower and a lot less aggressive and threatening. But yeah, back the early stuff was very, very hard. It was very hard hitting. And it just was kind of like a lot of, you know, pent up frustration from teens growing up.
We can tell.
yeah. With not that many opportunities or whatever. And so, but we related to it. It just was what we were used to. We all did it. We all listened to it. And it just was a part of our culture.
So you're saying you were friends with Dizzy Rascal back in the day? That was your homie?
You know, Dizzy was like, I'm glad you mentioned him. He was like the first one to cross over into the mainstream. But I listened to Dizzy back when he was like 17. He actually used to come. There was a radio station in Tottenham. It was called Heat FM. It was, I think, 96.6 FM on the dial. Dizzy was from East London. So to come to North London was maybe like, for him back then, a 30, 45 minute train ride. And so I first heard him at 17 in a radio station in Tottenham. And then obviously I think in 2004, released his first album, the first Grime album, which did very well, and he became big. But I grew up listening to him. My older brother actually was in one of his music videos a few years back. But yeah, this is a legend.
That's a Heat FM. Is that that was the pirate radio station, right?
Pirate radio station, yeah. All of Grime was on pirate radio station, where we would just steal the frequencies of actual real stations. And the thing about those pirate stations, they were never in the same spot for too long, because the police would get wise to it and you'd have to move to it was like in rooftops, it was in people's basements, it was, you know, in different flats and apartments. Like, it just,
yeah,
it's like week to week.
It's like when people had to move their trap house to like another
exactly the same thing.
It's so funny. Here it's the house drugs, in London it's a radio station. they're trying to get the music out.
But
yeah,
it's interesting, because like I went to Brazil a couple years ago and they have a music called Baile Funk, which is like their grime, their trap music. And
radio stations don't want to play that at all.
Radio stations don't want to play.
They give away CDs for free. That's the only way they get the music.
They can't sell it at record stores because it's too divisive. The government doesn't like it. So it's a very similar, you know, with hip hop in general. I think when a new hip hop scene sort of arises, like the status quo is like, what? No, this is not. We won't allow this. This goes against everything we believe in.
And it's kind of funny that, you know, grime music kind of mimics soccer in America, where it's like this small, you know, the small thing, the subculture, but now it's starting to become really big. When did you come into the league? Because I know you've been around, 2009?
I came in the first year of the Sounders, so 2009.
Okay. Now, so you've seen this league grow from, 2010? There was the contraction and people thought the league was going to fold at that point, to where we are now, where people are paying so much money for expansion. I mean, we're trying to find $150 million to see if we can get a Cooligans FC going, Cooligans United FC Sporting, to see if we can get that. I don't know if you want to help with that. but I mean, now where it's at, where there's people in Europe and Saudis, and everybody wants to get in on this league. How does that feel?
I mean, watching the growth is actually crazy, because when I came in the league, I think there was like 15 teams. And you know, the level was still good. There were still good players and stuff, but the exposure that MLS has, just like through social media or through the TV contracts, wasn't anywhere near what it is now. And to now kind of be one foot on the inside, you know, because I still have a lot of friends in the league and I still watch, but on the outside, being retired, it's crazy to watch. It's like it feels more like a legitimate league. Like, you have not just one or two DPs around the league with a big name. Almost every team has big name players. Who I look at someone like a David Villa or a Giovinco. These guys seem like very committed to their teams. It's not the DP and the rest of them. It's just a part of the team now. I think that's the biggest difference for me. Where the top players and the rest of the team, it seems like one now. And that's helped market the league, I think, across to so many countries. Friends back home in England, I know now they watch MLS. Before, they'd watch me because I was playing or someone they knew. Now they'll just watch an MLS game. So I think that crossover has been amazing, and it's helped bring in the guys they brought over. And I hope the league just continues to grow and the level grows and the exposure grows. It still is a young league, but I think now is actually the time where it can really make that big leap to the next level.
And we know, you're obviously doing you do sideline reporting for the Seattle Sounders. I hear you from time to time. What was your impression of the Sounders winning the MLS Cup last season? We were at the MLS Cup and we couldn't believe They won it without.
Yeah, we snuck on the pitch. Whether that, where MLS, hopefully is not. Hopefully Don Garber's not listening to this. But we snuck on the pitch during the trophy celebration.
We were
pretty
saying,
awesome.
We were saying, we shook some hands, said yeah. some hellos.
Okay.
But what did you know? Obviously the match in itself, Seattle Sounders did not get a shot on target, but ended up winning the right. MLS Cup. What did you think of that performance and just the whole playoff run?
Yeah, I think the whole thing with Seattle, just being in Seattle since 2009, I think this team's always been successful somewhat. You know, we won the Open Cup, first 3 years in existence. This team's won a Supporters Shield before. I think it's been to 5 Open Cup finals, winning 4. I think that's a number. And then last year, all of a sudden, the team struggled, really, really struggled through the start of the year for many reasons. And then, you know, eventually the coach, the only coach we've ever known in Seattle, Ziggy Schmidt, gets fired. And then his assistant, Brian Schmetzer, gets promoted up. And then a turnaround began. And it wasn't just because of that. You know, they signed Nico Lodero and, you know, Roman Torres came back from injury. And a few things happened and the team began to click. And then watching from that point on, it was just, it began to seem like destiny to a certain point because the turnaround was just so remarkable. The energy around the city began to grow. And then that particular game itself, about the 70th, 80th minute in, when it became obvious that attacking-wise, the Sounders wouldn't do much today, but Toronto just couldn't score, and then Stephen Fry made that save. It just was, you know, this is just meant to be. The Seattle, they're going to win. You don't do all of that, have that turnaround, have this kind of performance where it's just a really gutsy performance, and you're under pressure from Toronto. You maybe could have scored 2 or 3 goals on another day. You don't go through all of that and then lose. So I just felt that things were turning in Seattle's favor. And then when Torres scored his penalty, like everybody else, you know, I became a fan again. Just my friends, the city, the organization, you know, I'm good friends with the ownership, the GM, the coaching staff. Everyone, it just was happy as anyone who lives or is from Seattle or supports the Sounders would be. And it just meant so much to everyone there that was great to be a part of.
They do have a great fan base, and I think the moment that highlighted how happy they were about winning the MLS Cup was Clint Dempsey in the parade celebration.
Yeah. He's like, now Portland can't say shit.
Sounded like the dude from The Wire.
Yeah, that was great.
The mayor.
And that gets the fans going, man. And that was one of the things that the fan base, they were there early. You know, I think they only got 1,500 tickets, something like that. Their section was wild for the entire match. And we were there, and it was absolutely freezing. Apparently, we got media passes, but I think we got ancillary media passes because everyone else was in a tent. It was just me and Christian and like 4 other dudes. Outside in the cold, like, let us in the damn tent.
Yeah, you know? We know where we stand with the MLS.
Yeah, MLS is like, you invited, but like, you need to help clean the plates a little bit. You need to make your presence felt in a different way. How did it feel watching it not being out there? Was that tough?
No, because I'd been retired a couple seasons at that point.
Oh, but don't say that. No. You tried to make a comeback, though. Were you inspired by that?
Once I saw that, I'm joking. But no.
you're like, I'm trying to get me a ring, baby.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, for that particular one, no, I've very much felt like a sideline reporter. I felt like someone who's on the broadcast team. I didn't feel like a player. So it wasn't hard for me. I think it was hard for someone like Dempsey. And I've spoken to him since because we actually roomed together this past preseason, and that came up where he was on the team and couldn't play. So it's harder from that perspective. For me, it wasn't because I was already on the outside. I had already began training with the team at that point. So maybe a part of me felt like a part of the team, but for the most part, it was just supporting the guys like I tried to do every game in an objective way. And that probably was the pinnacle of any one of us who's been ever associated with the Sounders to witness.
All right. Yeah. And you know, we definitely want to ask about just your story, especially your comeback. If people don't know, you know, you were playing, you got drafted by the Sounders and you suffered, you know, a very terrible injury in 2011. But you did make a comeback about 2 years later, roughly. And I've you know, I've been watching you know, some of the videos you've been doing that you put out online just about sort of that comeback and how even that story, listening to you talk about it is easily inspiring, right? And I can imagine a lot of people feel the same way. But I guess I'm just curious about, you know, where are you now? Maybe you can give a brief synopsis on kind of what happened and where you are now.
Yeah, you know, I think people that are familiar with it know that, you know, I came out to Seattle in 2009 after spending two great years at the University of Akron. And that draft class that I came in with was very talented.
Sorry to interrupt you, but that was Caleb Porter still, right?
At Akron, yeah. Caleb, yes. He brought me over from England, actually, and him and his assistant coaches. So I played my freshman year, my sophomore year there for him at Akron. Then was drafted to Seattle with their number one pick. That were the expansion team. And I was drafted, you know, same year with Omar Gonzalez, Rodney Wallace, AJ De La Garza, Chris Pontius. I mean, really good players. I'm leaving probably Graham Zusi. I'm leaving a lot of guys out probably, but it was just a very talented draft class. And I came to Seattle and I was fortunate to come to an expansion team because no one had an established spot on the team. We all had to fight. And I ended up, you know, being the starting left winger on the team and played, you know, every game pretty much my rookie year. My second year was leading the team in scoring. My third year was probably on my way to doing something similar. Probably that's when I was playing the best football of my career in 2011. And then, you know, in the sixth game of that season, suffered a broken leg in a game, very bad tackle. And it's just one of those injuries where, you know, it's unfortunate when it happens. You've seen it happen before. You never expect that will happen to you. It did happen to me. And then the thing that made it tough was just, because you can come back from that, but there was a lot of complications with it, and with the surgeries and with nerves and all kinds of other things that just made it that much tougher. Eventually did come back. And I would say from the end of 2012 through midway through 2013, maybe, I can't remember now, but I felt fine. And the leg was healed and I was back in the starting lineup and was playing. And then I suffered a couple of groin injuries. And that is what sent things over the edge, because before that, I'd never had any muscle injuries, but after you come back from such a big injury, you know, your body's not the same. And so the groin this week, and then it's the hamstring, and then it's the quad. And I never just recaptured for a long time my previous form. And then obviously end up going down to Portland to reconnect with Caleb Porter and Darlington Nagbe and some of my friends down there. And never quite worked out for me over there. Just couldn't stay fit for more than 5-6 weeks at a time. And then that's when I just decided to call it a day, because for me, it was quality of life at that point became more important than trying to fight this thing. And I probably could have played 5-6 more years, but just been a guy on an MLS roster. And after having been one of the key guys in the Sounders attack, that wasn't for me. If I was going to play, then I had to contribute at a higher level. And I wasn't able to do that. So retired at the end of 2014 season. And the past 2 years, been doing a whole lot of stuff, man. Just, you know, some things in football, some things not. And then this past off season, they talked me into thinking about a comeback.
Yeah, right. It must have really been hard to twist your arm there.
Yeah, and then, you know, no, what actually happened was I do a charity game out in Seattle every year for my foundation, and I bring out a lot of MLS vets, US soccer vets. You know, we had Jimmy Conrad and Landon Donovan and Dwayne DeRosario. They all came out last year, Oguchi Onyewu. And then seeing Landon come back was probably the first domino to fall in my attempt, because, you know, I talked to Landon and, you know, listen, Landon's a great player, one of my favorite players ever to play against. But in my charity game, I thought that I looked just as good as him. And I was like, if Landon can come back and he's 34, then there's a chance. So through that, talking to the Sounders ownership, the technical director, the coaching staff, it was like, let's just give it a try. You know, we'll never know. And so I trained towards the end of last season, leading up to the MLS Cup run. And then off-season, worked out with Clinton Dempsey quite a lot because he was also coming back from some health issues. And then did preseason with the team and felt great in preseason. You know, never missed a training session. Body felt great. But something was just missing for me. And it was, one, I realized that to actually get back to my previous level might take me several months. And I didn't want to go through that. I thought I could play on an MLS team. I could be under 18. I could be, you know, a sub who comes in, maybe start some games, but not the dynamic winger who was playing 90 minutes. And for me, if it wasn't going to be that, then it just wasn't worth it. And I was happy I gave it a try, but then, you know, I let the team know that, you know, it's not going to happen this year. It's not going to happen again. I'm at peace. I've walked away from the game. I'm enjoying my life now. And I can always look back on the run that I had. It was a great run. And unfortunately, it came to an end through injuries, but these things happen.
So what's your goal previous was to win an MLS Cup, maybe make it to Europe. What's your goal now?
You know, now I do a lot of things. You know, one of the things that happened when I retired was I sought a lot of advice from people. The great thing about the game of football is the people I got to meet, you know, some of them are people I grew up watching and eventually was able to establish friendships with them just through meeting them. Others is people that I met in the game. And I talked to as many people that I retired as I could. You know, everyone from, I mean, Thierry Henry retired that same year that I retired. And he was almost 40 at the time. So he was like, he'd had a long career and was going into retirement. It was kind of different to my situation. But I spoke to him. I spoke to one of my former teammates, a guy called Patrick Iani, who also retired at that time. So the main advice I got was just don't rush into anything. Take your time with what you're doing. So I've dabbled in many things since then, and I'm still kind of finding exactly what it's going to look like. But I would say my main goal is to move back home within the next few years. I run a foundation out in Seattle, which, you know, gives out a lot of scholarships for kids, and we do a lot of things here in Washington. But eventually I want to go back to London, not Tottenham, but London. And then
you made it out, no reason to go back.
Yeah,
listen, I'm born and raised in Newark, New Jersey, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know.
So I'm happy to be in New York, you know what I mean, for the last few years. A lot less bullet wounds out here reason. But is it hard for you, because are you going to try to go to like Islington or Angel, because you're an Arsenal guy?
Yeah, I'm an Arsenal fan. No, I mean, I'll live, you know, there's certain places I've already looked at that I want to live at, that I want to go and kind of settle down. And I do miss London from that perspective. But, you know, I think that's really my goal. I don't have like career goals in that sense. I'm kind of finding out what works and enjoying like three or four different things I'm involved in, different projects. And I just enjoy that. But my goals are more just life-wise, where I want to live eventually, grow up, grow old at. And it's going to be back home. And I can't wait to be back in that environment where I'm going to games again, Arsenal games or whatever, and being a fan of the game again after playing for so many years and then working in it for so many years as well.
That's awesome. Speaking of Arsenal, what are you thinking about this year? I'm a big Arsenal fan. This is the first time in a very long time that I'm not celebrating St. Tottenham's Day. It's really upsetting me. But, you know, I've been an Arsene Wenger in guy for a long time. This year, I'm like, move him over to the board. I don't know that what's happening isn't working. Three men in the back. It's kind of upsetting me. Why are we switching formations for the first time in 20 years? You know, I'm very upset. But where do you feel? How do you feel about all this?
You know, I'll say this, man. I signed for the Arsenal Academy back in 1997. So this is like, I've been associated with that club for a very long time.
Who else was in your class? Do you remember any? Did any of those guys pop?
I don't know if you guys remember, but a few years ago, Kansas City signed a winger called Ryan Smith. He was a left-footed guy. He was an English guy. He was only there for like half a year and then it didn't quite work out. But he was one of the best players, actually, I played with growing up. And he played really well for Kansas for like 5-6 games and then just never really adapted to MLS. He was the class above me. A guy who was a couple years under me was a guy called Jack Wilshere.
Of course.
And
never heard of him.
Yeah.
That's because you're not a doctor. Sorry. I really am a fan. That upsets me.
So there was a few. And then there's probably a lot of guys from my class. There are a lot of guys who actually play elsewhere now. The guy that MLS fans might know now is a guy called Jay Simpson, who just signed for Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah,
I've known Jay since we were like 9 years old. He was the class below me, but he would actually play with us a few times. He was just a goal scorer even back then. And so I've known Jay for a long time. So just a lot of different players. But I arrived there, I think it was shortly after Wenger had just come. And he was still implementing changes. And you could feel it from the whole club down. We were 9 years old and we were feeling some of the changes that he implemented just in the coaching style, the way we played. The system, and we would actually get tickets to every home game because they wanted us to go and watch the first team so that we could learn from them and replicate what we did in our own academy games. And they would quiz us on the guy in our position, what did he do? And so that, I respect him so much for that. And people at the club that I've spoken to, that I'm still friends with, coaches and administration people, everyone thinks so highly of him. But at the same time, I think it's time for Wenger to go, because sometimes you just need a change for the sake of changing it. I mean, he's been there for 20 years. We haven't won the league since 2004. That was my last year of high school in England. Like, and I've had a lot of life to live since then. And to think that the last time I celebrated Arsenal winning the league was back then, and even a serious, serious title challenge hasn't happened in so long. So just from that perspective, and we've always kind of fallen back on, well, we're top four every year, Champions League every year. And now this year, that might not happen. So
yeah, which is, you know, it's impressive. Yeah. It's impressive to build a new stadium and to pay off all the debts. But we did it. You know, and let's can we win? Right. Can we win a little something right now? I've been. I don't know if you listen to this show. If you listen to the show, you know I've been yelling for right. Sampaoli. I think Sampaoli over at Sevilla would be the perfect. And he's Chile. He managed the Chilean national team, so Alexis will stay. We'll bring in Vidal. I don't know. Sounds like a win-win. And his and he's a little better at Pochettino's own style. So back to you know North London is red again. Oh my God, I'm amazing.
Yeah, no, he's he's actually really good. I actually was advocating for Thierry Henry, but that was kind of an initial emotional response, just because when I grew up, he was like the Messi. He was something else, and so maybe he's a few years away from actually being ready to be a coach. I know he probably thinks he can do it right now, and I would love to see just anyone who kind of has the new ideas. Wenger's ideas, to an extent, maybe like from the old school now. So Sampaoli would be a good one. The guy at Juventus, Allegri.
Allegri would be great.
Yeah, he'd be great. So I think anyone along those lines for me at this point, man. I think just a change, yeah.
As soon as Zizou took over at Real Madrid and it went well, everyone's like, all right, let's bring back our legends. You know, so Arsenal fans, there's two types of Arsenal fans. Either they want Thierry Henry back or they want Bergkamp, because he's been coaching for a while too. Yeah. So I say bring them both back. We'll have two managers, right? Put them both on the sideline, and everyone's going to be so afraid to mess up because you've got two legends there.
All right. So one last question that I was curious about. Also, so after your injury, obviously it was a very public. Your comeback was very publicized, and it was on national television. But the moment that was obviously very surreal for a lot of people was your ability to forgive, right? Because the man who did tackle you and did injure you,
right?
I forgot his first name. Mullen was I forgot his first name.
Brian Mullen.
But after the match, you traded jerseys with him, and watching that, you know, for me personally, I'm just like, if somebody even cuts me off driving, can't even.
You're dead to us. Yeah.
So, right. What did it take for you to get to that point of being able to forgive at that level?
Yeah, I mean, great question, man. You know, it honestly took a lot, because what happened was, when the injury initially happened, I kind of right away I knew this is done. I've seen these injuries before. And it was April, and I knew that my season's done. I'm not playing again this year. And I was okay with that. I came to terms with that. And it was that night when I was in a hospital, had my surgery, and I woke up the next morning. He had made some quotes, and my agent and myself were talking about it. And it was something like, you know, I've made that tackle 1,000 times. I'd do it again. And that's the thing that pissed me off, because it was like, you know, I'm lying here in hospital. My career's in jeopardy. And you're saying you do that tackle again. But when he said that, I don't think he realized the extent of what was going on. And then a few of his teammates, who were my friends, visited me in the hospital. And then we got word that he wanted to visit, but you know, I had like my parents there, my friends there, and it was like, there's no way he can come here. Like, he just wouldn't be welcomed by them.
Yeah, my mom is just gonna crack.
Yeah.
My mother be no waiting way. For him, break his knee, be like, how's it feel, dude?
Exactly. So it's just, they were like, absolutely not, we're not doing that. So I told my agent, I said, like, you know, let them know that, you know, we're not gonna do that right now. So then the first kind of couple weeks after that, you know, I was just focused on having my surgeries and trying to get back home to Seattle. And once I did that, and then okay, I'll able to process what happened, a lot of people reached out to me. You know, I don't like to kind of, sometimes I don't like saying these stories, but I feel like I can probably say it here. The first person to actually ever email me, I received thousands of emails when I was injured from everybody around the world, friends back home, people that didn't know me, people that don't watch the game, who just got wind of the story. But the first person to actually email me was David Beckham. And that was, you know, I'd played against LA. We had a rivalry back then, and he knew I was from England, and we'd had small talk, but I didn't expect that. And the thing he said in the email was just, I had an Achilles injury a few years ago. They told me I'd never play again. I've come back and I've won a couple championships. So I've won a championship. So he was saying, like, use every ounce of energy on your comeback. Don't think about anything else. And I took that to mean, like, even being bitter towards Mullen would take away from my comeback attempt. So that was it. The decision was just made that every ounce of energy I have has to go into my rehab and my PT, and then eventually my training. So I just began to focus on that. And then, what, one of, are you guys New York City FC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we talk about the whole league, but we are season ticket holders to NYCFC.
Yeah,
sure.
But one of my good friends, like even someone like Rodney Wallace, for example, who you guys are getting familiar with now. Like I've known Rodney for a very long time, and we would talk because he had an injury back then. It wasn't as serious as mine, but we would talk too, and they all were saying the same thing. Just focus on your recovery. And then after 3 or 4 months, I realized that I haven't even thought about Brian Mullen. I'm just thinking about coming back. And so then it became easy. It just, I didn't really think about him. I just thought about playing. I'd played against him before. And nothing happened. So there wasn't any premeditation. So that made it easier too. It wasn't like he came out to get me. He made a very bad decision. He was frustrated. He didn't get a call. It was like the third minute of the game. Like, I was barely getting warmed up. So it didn't make any sense for him to do what he did. And I think he immediately regretted it. And I was able to let go because I realized it wasn't personal. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing that he did. But if I had any hope of ever playing in this league again, I had to focus on my comeback. And then I think when I began to say that publicly, people didn't believe me because they were saying, no, you should be a little bit angry. But I really wasn't. So the trading jersey swapping shirts was almost just kind of, I'd let it go. But in order for everyone else to kind of get closure on it, I think it was important. It was a national TV game. It was my first minutes since the injury. And I knew that the cameras were on me. So once I did that, people barely talked about that situation from that context again of, how are you and Brian Mullen? Because they saw us swap shirts. And that's why I did that, to put the whole thing to bed, let it go. And then at that point, I could really move on and focus on trying to come back.
How many Tottenham Roadmen did you have to call down, tell them not get on the plane?
You know, man, listen, man, that is funny because so many of my, like I grew up, you know, where I grew up is, you know, it is what it is. And so many of them, I'm still in touch with them, my friends, and they would watch the games I would play. And it was just funny to me, guys who are probably like, they're probably selling drugs in and out of jail, who stayed up to 4 a.m. to watch an MLS game. But that's what was happening. But yeah, all of them, they reached out to me, man. But it wasn't, not in that sense that do something to Brian Mullen, but it was very aggressive, very, you know, hey, get us a ticket, we'll be on the first plane over if you need anything, kind of like that. So yeah, they were still very protected of me.
That's pretty awesome. But, when I first started performing stand-up, I would have friends from Newark come out to watch me. And they would all, you know, comedians, like, will joke on each other. The host will make a joke about if you had a bad joke or something before. And they'd all come up to me after the show and be like, hey, you want us to handle this? That dude's disrespecting you. Like, No. Everybody needs to calm down.
I'm trying to perform here again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they'd be like, 2 drink minimum. They don't even have Kvassier. We're like, why are you drinking Kvassier at a comedy club? You're not in a Diddy video.
I mean, but Steve, that's incredible. I mean, it is the level of maturity it takes. And for a young man to feel that way after, you know, a severe injury, I mean, it's nothing but admirable and
for sure,
and inspiring.
Yeah,
because we watched it and we got angry watching it, you know.
yeah, you know, and you know what my hope is, all I've never actually watched it back. Never watched it back. People have told me, you know, and the only time I accidentally almost saw it was the week after. I was in hospital in Seattle. The Sounders were playing at home to Toronto. I had the game on, and ESPN replayed it, or someone replayed it, and I ended up looking away just at the right moment. But I've never actually watched it back, and because for me, it's like I don't want to relive it in that sense. Like I've relived, as you can imagine, that moment a million times. If this had gone different, that had gone different. Because the question you're always going to ask is, where would my career have gone? You know, where would I be? When sometimes I watch, like, in a fun way, that my friends, like Darlington Nagy, or someone like that, and I watch what they're doing, then I wonder, you know, had I not got injured, where would my level have been? And we talk about that amongst ourselves as well at times. But that was maybe like a year after retiring. Now I barely get that because I'm so kind of at peace and content with life, and I've accepted that it happened. And I just look at it as, in, you know, the body of work I did at Akron in college and in the pros the first 3 years or so can't be taken away, is what it is. And then the injury happened. So I kind of learned to let go. But yeah, something that might actually help me is the fact that I've never actually gone to watch that video.
Well, if anything, if this relieves any of that, you might not be on the phone with us right now. If that had not happened, your career would be different, you know? So think about it. I mean, right? Career highlights. You'd not be talking to the Cooligans right now.
What a silver lining. But honestly, Steve, just incredible. Just thank you for being on the call. Thank you for talking to us. And you know, even though I'm trying to even sympathize or even empathize as to what happened, and I know I can imagine It's sort of like someone telling me, like, you can't do stand-up comedy ever again.
And, right.
And so that kind of that fear, you know, that even I think about that also. I'm like, what if I can't do stand-up at some point in my life? And that and just thinking about that, how much turmoil that can cause. When I think about you and even though something bad happened in your career and it didn't go exactly how you wanted it to go, it can inspire even more meaning in what you're doing now. You know, that is a very
admirable, for sure.
Admirable. And then gives people a sense of purpose, even if it's not exactly what the path they thought they were going
to
be on.
And your story beyond playing soccer, that we're all in tune to, you know, we're all seeing your sideline reporting and we're all inspired every time. So we're going to continue following you, and we'd love to come check out that charity match.
If you guys ever can make it out, honestly, man, we invite pretty much anyone who retires. I keep my eye on so I can try and get into my game. And then we have a bunch of former Sounders guys. This year we're having actually Chad Cultural Singles coming out to us.
When is it?
It's on July 2nd in Seattle. And Marshawn Lynch will be with us this year, which, I mean, if you're going to see Marshawn Lynch trying to tackle Jimmy Conrad or something like that, you'll never see anything like that anywhere else. So he'll be here with us. So it's going to be, we do that game. It's the first half is usually a real game, and then second half we kind of throw in some comedic elements and fun bits to it. But it's a really cool event.
We just hosted the NY Fest out here, and it's sort of the same thing. Okay. They take it a little too serious, and then some people are just having fun. absolutely. Maybe we'll come out and check that out. And where can everyone follow you?
Twitter, man, it's just my name, Zakuani11. And honestly, when I played, I was barely on Twitter, but now I'm like always on there. I reply to everything, I see everything. So like, I interact on Twitter. I try to share my thoughts on Sounders and MLS and stuff when I can. And, you know, Instagram is all Steve Zakuani11. Just social media, the usual. I probably have a website. I can't remember if I have one, but I don't know. It's probably.
Well, hit him up. And Americans, if you're listening and you don't know anything about grime, ask Steve. He'll talk to you. He'll send you some links. He's going to send you some stuff that's going to blow the speakers off your car.
Absolutely. But you're from Brooklyn. I'm just going to say that my favorite musician of all time is Biggie.
Of course.
That's the best rapper. So I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, now you're spreading love the Brooklyn way.
Exactly.
So how good is that? Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, Steve.
Exactly. Hey, thanks, man.
Was a pleasure, man. Thank you, man.
Thank you. And guys, we'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Cooligans. We're going to ask you to help us out just a little bit. You've seen some of the shirts we're wearing. They're on the Volley Apparel. They're absolutely incredible. It's kind of like a hip-hop, soccer-themed type of whole clothing brand. They're absolutely incredible.
Yeah, you can wear the stuff, to outside. You got where to hang out. You can wear it's gear. You can wear it to play.
You can wear it to the White House. You can wear it to the Trap House.
Exactly. Either you can wear the same outfit to both of those places.
And maybe for some people that's the same house. So you could absolutely wear it at all different occasions. It's really cool. And guess what? If you use the code Cooligans, COOLIGANS, you're not only going to get 20% off, but we're going to get some of that money, which is really cool.
Yeah, you'll be supporting the Cooligans by just buying fly clothing.
Right. So you save money and we make a little, which we're going to pump all back into the show just to help promote it and get more people listening, which would really help us out. So you want to look fly for the summer, go to onthevolleyapparel.com, go get yourself some gear. How about you save some money by putting in the word Cooligan, COOLIGANS, and we make a little scratch.
That does sound good.
Huh? It's not bad.
Not good. Sound good?
It's like our own little trap house.
Oh, yes. Also, they also sell cocaine.
All right. Maybe not cocaine, but go out and buy yourself. That discount's not going to work on coke, but it will work on dope gear.
Also, if you're buying cocaine, don't mention the Cooligans at all.
Don't say the Cooligans at all. We're not going to make any money off of that. We promise our parole officers. Check out onthevolleyapparel.com. Man, that was a great conversation.
Wasn't that fun?
Steve's a good, dope dude.
Yeah, it's cool to, we met a lot of different people doing this. And it's